your reaction to Chris Buckler's story this morning, his interview with Matthew, and that life-defining moment. That's what we're asking you today. Have you had a life-defining moment, Jim and Enniskillen, and how has it changed you? Good morning to you, Jim.
Good morning.
Thanks for calling us, Jim. So what's yours?
Well, I was just listening to that story, and you cannot put into words what went through that man.
Yeah.
I was on the operating table for 47 hours.
You were?
Yeah.
Why?
I was in the Enniskillen off a date bomb. I have had 46 operations in 30 years. But listen to that story about that man, the mental torture and anguish, the horrendous loneliness. I don't think he ever will be able to describe or tell what went through his mind. It is something belongs to another world. We don't have a language in this world to explain what he went through. I don't think he will ever forget it. It'll stay with him for the rest of his life. It will change him. He's been brought up to the very edge of death. And that's something we generally don't experience, to be brought so slowly and so steadily up to the edge of death. And what is lying ahead?
Can you tell me, Jim, about you? You say you've been in how many operations?
46.
Wow, the people, my goodness.
I have three more this year.
My goodness, people often talk in the middle of a political debate on this show of how we cannot forget about victims. 46 operations because of your injuries from the Enniskillen bomb.
Yes.
Can you tell me what the bomb did to your body?
My skull was smashed badly. The eye sockets disintegrated in my head. The roof of my mouth was blown out. I was split from my chin up to my ear. My jaw was missing. My eyeballs were sitting in my cheeks. I had 9 ribs broken, hip badly smashed, and my leg badly smashed, and my face paralysed. I couldn't just tell you everything. About 5 years ago, I was up at the hospital, and I was walking along, and a very tall, erect gentleman stopped me. He said, "Excuse me, sir, are you the man who was in the bomb?" I said, "Yes." He said, "I was a surgeon that worked with you." He said, "You shouldn't be alive today." Took me a day to get over what he said. But God is merciful. And God gave me an opportunity to make right with him, because there's a man who wants to die.
What,
after that situation,
I'm asking today how a life-defining moment changes how you look upon the world. How did it change you?
You see, the world is completely different. We're so wrapped up in ourselves. Generally, we think we love everybody, but really we don't. We have a lot of hate, and we have a lot of things in our lives, how we see people. After that, you see people totally different. You have a different type of perspective of life.
What do you mean by that?
Oh. It takes you to ask an awkward question. But
what do you mean by that?
Well,
can you put words to it?
You see life very selfishly. once you get your experience of life, you lose that selfishness that you have. You try to reach out to help people. I set up a center and a skill to help people because I was able to cope. Well, I know it was with an awesome struggle. And it was only with God's help that I was able to get myself together. We have two centers in Enniskillen where we try to help people that have problems. It's called the Ely Center. And we have opened one in Portadown. And I think it's very important that we try to help people rather than have this critical attitude that we have.
I asked you, Jim, what the bomb did to your brain. To your body. What did it do to your brain? What did it do to your sense of self? In other words, do you get flashbacks? Do you?
Well, I remember.
Are you psychologically affected for the rest of your life when that happens?
I remember my daughter and my wife took me, went down to Londonderry and brought me home in the car. And I wanted a nice cream. So coming to Fineville Town, they stopped, it was in, and got me an ice cream. Well, I didn't realise I couldn't eat an ice cream. My lips were paralysed. I couldn't open my mouth. What did you do? I rubbed my finger out and rubbed it on my lips. I was coming on, excuse me. I was coming in Enniskillen. They asked me, did I mind going by the cenotaph? I said, no. We had just got past about 50 yards past the cenotaph where the policeman stepped out. He says, you can't go down that road, there's a bomb on it. My inside came out through my mouth. I very seldom have talked about this. But that was a horrendous moment.
What did you feel inside you?
I thought the whole inside had come up to my mouth. I was devastated. I couldn't put into words. It was horrendous. Does these people realise? I never had the chance of speaking to Martin McGuinness. I didn't hate Martin McGuinness. I then had the opportunity of speaking to him. I would have told him he was going to meet God someday.
What would you have said to Martin McGuinness?
Martin McGuinness, I don't. What you did was evil. Well, I said I wouldn't want you to go to hell. Get right with God. I didn't want that man to suffer what I went through. Yes, I know he was the perpetrator. And worst of all, I think that our British government would elevate these people to such a level in our country is unbelievable.
Well, Martin McGuinness would say, and some of those from his community would say, that equally there are people suffering just as much as you.
I know that.
Jim,
and I visit them.
From their community.
I visit IRA men.
Do you?
I do, yeah.
Why?
I pity them. Because I know a lot of IRA men. The man that blew our factory up in Newton Butler. He told me he'd do it when I wasn't there. He'd make sure I wasn't there. But he told me he had no option. He says, if I don't do it, I get shot. He says, I just get a note in the hedge. I didn't know what I was doing. He says, when I joined that organisation, that man asked me 6 or 7 weeks after the pleasure flew up to go and see him. I went to see me, the wife of 5 children. He says, I've been asked to do something I can't do, he says. And he says, I don't know what's going to happen when you look after the wife and children. I said, I will. I pity Mary. It's an evil, evil system. The people that say they can do these things are not doing them of their own free will. They're doing it to save their lives. I never really ever afraid of IRA. I've been up for years and years. I moved amongst them.
Jim, have you been able... The Enniskillen bomb was 1987. Have you been able to have any sense of much happiness in your life since it happened?
I've had a lot of happiness in my life. And my biggest desire would be if I could rehab the IRA to change their mindset. They brought the IRA, and this story is never told, the IRA brought the murder and mayhem into this country. They were massacring Protestants right, left, and centre, and Catholics. They wouldn't do what they were told. And it was reactions to that, because the British government was doing nothing, that the Protestants, which was an awful mistake, took retribution. But it never should have happened. No man has a right to touch another man's life or his body. And this whole thing of saying you're bad and I'm bad, anybody that takes offence at another person's body to do harm will meet God someday.
You've really stopped me in my tracks today, Jim. You really have. I didn't expect this. I really didn't. My goodness, we often talk about victims, don't we?
Well, can you think of this man that's on that raft, facing death on his own? Loneliness, not knowing what he was going to have to go through, what he was going to have to suffer, how he was going to die, what way he was going to die. It is horrendous. That man will never forget that.
Were you conscious, Jim, after the bomb exploded?
I was conscious. I was going in and out of consciousness. They took me up to the Enniskillen Hospital.
So did you see things around you?
Your perceptions are totally different. My story would be completely different to those that my wife was in the bomb beside me. And she was trying to help me.
What did you see around you?
Well, I was buried in the bomb. The building fell on top of me. Sammy Foster was one of the first that came. I was helping to get them to dig me out. The building fell and crushed me.
And you were conscious when you were buried under the rubble?
I was suffocating, yes.
And you...
I remember when they lifted... You see, what really happened, what I thought happened, were two different things. What my wife tells me happened, and what I think happened, are two different things. I thought I was getting up. And I knew I was hurt. I put my hand up to my face. Oh, I said, the blood was running down my arm. I said, I'm badly hurt. But I was being attended to it. That was different to what was really happening. That was my perception.
Can you remember being under the rubble?
Yes, I do.
What does that feel like and sound like, Jim?
Words wouldn't explain it. It was like being in a tunnel of darkness and smothering. I can't get your breath. And you're just, it's like a nightmare.
And did you think you were going to die?
I couldn't even think that. Somehow there's a preservation, possibly the same thing with that man that was on that raft. There's a preservation, I believe, that God gives you that protects you, your sanity. And you, your mind is not able to cope with a lot of the realities that's going on. If God hadn't protected my mind and protected that man's mind, he would have went mental. We couldn't, normally we can't cope with those things. But I believe that God steps in and protects our sanity. And I believe that what that man went through, in reality, it would put any man mental to be facing death, facing night out in the cold, away from everybody else, and no thought of getting saved. And nothing really death stare him in the face, and not know what sort of death he was going to meet. It was a horrendous story. That time he wouldn't have come out of the show only because of it. I just had to explain maybe a little of what he went through, because I don't think he's capable of explaining what he went through. I think it's beyond comprehension what that man went through. How many hours was he there? Night and day. Could you comprehend what went through that man's mind?
32 hours.
He will never, ever forget it.
Jim, I've one final question for you. We're spending quite a lot of time at the moment in Northern Ireland,
yes,
discussing what our political future should be. When you hear all of those political fights and disagreements, what do you say to people in Northern Ireland?
The greatest curse we have is religion. Greatest curse we have is religion.
Why do you say that?
Because they did not only cause division and fight to everything else. God says, I am the way, the truth, and the life, not religion. When you die, God's not going to ask you what religion you are. If I go to see somebody on their dying bed, or if I go to visit somebody, I'm not interested in what religion they are. I'm not interested. I was reared in the South. I call myself a Republican from the South of Ireland. Our business with three businesses in the South of Ireland. I love the Irish people. Oh, if we could only learn to love each other.
And you say that you've got two more operations
coming up.
What are they, Jim?
I have no roof in my mouth. I have to try and build up a roof in my mouth. And I can't swallow. And I face it paralysed. I can't go out in public very much.
Why can't you go out in public?
Well, I'm drooling and I can't swallow and I can't. I have major problems. But it's an awful pity that we can't live as human beings. What's all this bitterness about? I love the Roman Catholic people. I'm what you call a so-called Protestant, but that's nothing.
How old are you, Jim?
I'm 80, over 80.
And 30 years after the Enniskillen bomb...
That's right, yeah.
..you're still getting operations because of it.
Yes. But, you know...
Can I just say...
For television, why can't they work for the good of everybody and not all this fighting and bickering and...
For those people who say draw a line under the past...
They don't have to draw a line under the
past. But you can't draw a line under the past, can you? Because you're still getting operations.
That's the wrong thing. That's the wrong thing. You don't draw a line under the past. If you don't remember the past, you have no future. But love covereth all. Learn to get the people to learn to love each other and do what's best for each other. Not... Get rid of all this old hate that's kicking about.
When's your operation, Jim?
Well, I have had a number of investigations. There were 8 or 9 surgeons that met to see what they could do with my mouth. they're waiting to see when they can do it, you know. But anyway, it'll be fairly shortly, I think. But
Jim, I want to say thank you so much. I'm looking at the computer screen now of the calls coming into Radio Ulster. There are some people saying that they are in absolute tears listening to you.
Well,
there are other people saying you're an inspiration.
That man went through. People couldn't comprehend it. That was a nightmare of awesome proportions. Out on the ocean, on his own, no hope of help, freezing to death. And what way am I going to die? Those are things I don't think he can ever tell a story. I'm only seeing it as I see it, and as I perceive it. And that's why I wouldn't have come out of this show only for that, because I don't believe that people understand or can even come anywhere near comprehend what that man went through.
Jared Nard Glass wants to speak to you, Jim. Good morning, Jared.
Morning, Stephen. Morning, Jim.
Good morning.
Jim, I'm just sitting listening to your story there, and I have to say, you're an inspiration, honest to God.
I
have to say that I have a lump in my throat this morning listening to your story, and I think that this morning a lot of our politicians in this country need to sit up, put their ears up, and listen to a man like yourself.
You've been through hell, mate, and I wish
you a speedy recovery, and your aberrations. But politicians need to listen to a man like yourself. You're the sort of person that needs to be sitting in government. You're the sort of person that I would give my vote for. So I want to wish you all the best of luck for the future.
Thank you very much. I hope you have a speedy recovery. And I do hope that many will take what you've said on board and make this country a better country.
100%, sir. 100%.
Yeah. Okay. God bless you.
God bless you.
Jim, thank you.
Right. Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye now.
My goodness. My goodness. I'm just trying to process that. It's just one of those special moments, isn't it? It happens sometimes in this radio show. I'll tell you what we've maybe been missing in our output. When I say our output, I mean this specific show, no other. We've maybe been missing that reminder from someone like Jim. And by the way, his story, that there could be stories from paramilitaries or others and all different walks of life in Northern Ireland who are still suffering because of what happened in the past. And I think what's been happening over the last few weeks and indeed months on this show is that we've been talking about politics with politicians and with commentators and with pundits, but we haven't heard enough from people who have actually been affected by the Troubles. And that's just an incredible reminder of the complex situation there is in Northern Ireland. When we talk about legacy, when we talk about the past, that sums up some of the complexity that there is in politicians trying to sort it. 03030 80 55 55. What we're doing today is we're asking in the back of Chris Buckler's report with Matthew Bryce, who survived 32 hours adrift at sea, if you've had a life defining moment. Brian and Ballymena, morning to you, Brian.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning.
I just find it hard to say anything after listening to Jim. It just made me speechless, and the wee moment I had is almost insignificant in comparison to what happened to him. But when I listened to Matthew yesterday on the radio driving home, and it made me actually think of a moment in my life when in 1982, when I was 20 years old, grew up on a farm, and it was the weather was good and things were busy, and I came home from my work and was helping with doing some tractor work, and I got caught up in a power takeoff shaft in the back of the tractor. Now, that's the thing in the back of the tractor that drives the machine that goes on behind. And you may remember in those days that people used to wear like those big old army jerseys, and it caught this jumper and it pulled me into the machine, and it was just a long, slow process. And I was pretty convinced that I was going to die.
And every second slowed down, presumably, when you were being pulled into that machine.
It was like an hour, only it was maybe a minute. But the first thing, I suppose, the first emotion was, you know, absolute fear, because I was, you know, you hear about these accidents, you read about them, you know, safety on farms is a major issue. And I suppose the second thing then was the pain. It was beginning to hurt. My body was being pulled into this thing that was turning around slowly. And again, what seemed like a lot of time, Stephen, those feelings, because I believed I was going to die. They actually turned to peace, and I believe that was because of my personal faith that was something that had just come to comfort me, and it was comforting me. And then, almost miraculously, somebody appeared in another machine, and I was able to shout to turn the engine off. And they turned it off, and I just collapsed. All my strength that I had to keep me out of the thing had all been used, and I just collapsed. And I suppose for the next hour or two, whilst I was in a bit of pain, my back was all pulled by this sort of nylon stroke wool type jumper, and that was all quite painful. But it wasn't really until about a day after that you know, the shock of what was happening set in. And it was just for me an awakening that life for a young fella, you know, can suddenly end just in a snap.
Brian, thank you so much. I wish I had more time this morning to speak to you about your story, but thank you for calling us, sir. We're getting some amazing stories coming into this radio programme this morning of life-defining moments.